The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy, our new weekly Gaelic football show.
Lads, it's official, right? No GAA player was practicing tackling at all during lockdown. They were practicing that dummy bounce.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Quinny, you're back.
I'm back, yeah. Apologies. You're back. The Wi-Fi isn't great.
That's all good and sounding much better. So take it from the top, front row, you were talking about Mako.
Yeah, I'll just name him first and then you can ask me about him, Adrian, if you want. So Mako Vunipola, Ken Owens, Tyke Furlong, Alan Wynne-Jones, Johnny Hill, Tyke Byrne, Talopi Faletau and Tom Curry.
Right. Tyke Byrne is the name that's jumping out at me.
Well, I was going to look. You could. There's a lot of stuff you can do with the back row. When you look at, you know, Jack Conan is there, Sam Simmons, Tipperick, Hamish Watson. There's loads of different players you can. You could play Tom Curry at six and play Tipperick or Hamish Watson at seven. You can put Tyke Byrne in there. I think the only guaranteed start. There's two guaranteed starters at the moment. I think there's definitely a bit of room for an opportunity at six, but I think Faletau and Tom Curry have, they're the two players that were, their performances in the Six Nations merit them being definite starters at the moment. Obviously, a lot can happen, you know, they've a lot of warm-up games before the first test in Joburg, but I'm picking Johnny Hill in the second one because I think he's a great player. Some of the English players will be kind of judged harshly. They were poor during the Six Nations. I think there was mitigation around that with a lot of Saracens players not having played matches. The other teams improving. The little drop in form for some of them for sure, but I think he's a great player.
And what about the Itoje absence? Obviously, will be a thing that would draw attention as well there, Quinny. I know you've sort of semi-touched on it there, but like the big player for the big game, that level of aggression, the physicality that's been mentioned about, like it's very harsh to look past him.
Well, if Alan Wynne-Jones is in captain, it's Itoje and Johnny Hill in the second, or the two English second rows. But obviously, Alan Wynne-Jones is captain. He's got to start. That may change. Warren Gatlin said that at the start of this when he announced the captaincy as well. But ideally, you want your captain starting all these three tests. And the reason I'm going for Johnny Hill is because I think Itoje's form maybe in the Six Nations wasn't great. I think, he's a superb player. He's world-class. And he's someone who inevitably will play really well in the warm-up games and all the games before the first test. So he could be a shoo-in. I'm picking a team based on tomorrow, first test. You've got to announce a team today. And I would be giving it to Johnny Hill. I think he's very, very physical. He's aggressive. He's really good in the line-out. His work rate is through the roof. And I'm thinking, you bring Itoje off the bench, someone like Itoje and Tipperick off the bench, you're getting incredible energy from those players and quality as well. So, you know, again, there's nothing separating some of these players. You could change the entire back row and have Hamish Watson there and Jack Conan and Sam Simmons. There's a lot of players there who are very, very close to each other. It's, you know, there'll be some of this will come down to experience. And as you say, big game players. Of course, Itoje is a big game player. And, you know, the front row, you could argue that Mako Vunipola, me picking Mako Vunipola over Wynne-Jones, who probably was the foreign player. I just think he's still not where he can get to. I still think he's improving. I just think if you get Mako Vunipola fit and match fit, that is, you know, he can be devastating with the ball and whatever.
Yeah, and certainly from that physicality point of view and everything that we believe is that's going to happen in South Africa will be interesting to see, and we'll pick through with Alan. We're just going to fix his line there again. Just that selection, particularly a Tyke Byrne in the back row, is an interesting one on because in some ways that versatility, I kind of assume that, not that surprised if he gets into the starting 15, but that versatility makes him an ideal candidate for the 23.
Well, that's it exactly, and you might have someone like Courtney Laws pushing up ahead of him into the starting team then. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I think will we take our lot with Furlong, Byrne and Henshaw? Like, I think that's something that we'd probably except as Irish fans. Or, like, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting first few weeks to actually see what the squad actually comprises
exactly.
of. Because
who's putting their hand up over those first few games? I'm sure he'll be looking at that. Like when he talks about Adoje, like first two, three games before the test crop up, you're looking at him to go, listen, I got to be in the team.
But also as well, the additions to the squad that are supposedly inevitable, that we're still kind of waiting for these moments of flux that thankfully, I guess, haven't happened just yet in that squad, because I think there hasn't been a Lions 2 in living memory where there hasn't been a Bolter who's all of a sudden been a part of the starting 15 yeah. conversation when it comes to actual test weekends. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But so Byrne and Furlong is where Ireland are at anyway, from 1 to 8.
Quinny, you're back with us. Will you tease out the... You went for Byrne, didn't you, in the back row?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Go on, will you tease that out with us? Because I was just saying there that, like, I think that maybe he pays a price for the versatility, but you're obviously seeing enough about him with Ireland over the last little while to stick him in there.
Yeah, I just think he gives you incredible turnover ability. You could easily put Courtney Laws there as well, which could happen. You could put Atoje in the back row. When the coaches sit down and they think, are we going to go head-to-head with him from a physical point of view? I think the players he's picked in the back row, you probably have four poachers there, you know, with Watson, Tipperick, Tom Curry, and even Sam Simmons is very good on the ground as well. So it kind of indicates that he's going for pace, mobility, and going to try and attack that South African breakdown. And I just think putting Tadhg Byrne into the back row, it gives you the line-out option, which will be crucial because South Africa's set piece is a big emphasis on that for them. But also, you know, that breakdown ability to get a couple of big turnovers. Mm. And I think he's proven himself in the Six Nations now that he's up to this level and he can perform consistently.
Yeah. Is the front row fairly straightforward, Quinny? Like, that there's not necessarily a huge amount of debate about it.
The only one that's straightforward and certain is Tadhg Furlong at this point. I think Jamie George, obviously from a fitness point of view, will hope to get up to speed. He's a top quality player. Cowan Dickey is, you know, explosive as well, and he's very good. But I think Ken Owens brings that consistency, physicality, strength, scrummaging ability, which again is a crucial area against the Springboks. And probably, look, I'm contradicting myself here a little bit on form, because the form Lou said is Wyn Jones. But I just think what Vunipola can bring, and if his fitness gets up to, match fitness gets up to where it can get to and where we know he can get to, I think he's a top, top player.
Yeah. So, yeah, Vunipola, Owens, Furlong, Alan Wyn Jones, Johnny Hill, and then you've gone for Byrne, Curry and Faletau across the back, Quinny.
Yeah, well, I was, you know, as I said, I could easily put Atoje or Courtney Laws in the back row, or take Johnny Hill out and put Atoje back in second row. You could switch a lot to these players, and I think it will come down to who's playing well in the warm-up games and who stands out. Someone like Hamish Watson could start in the first test as a 7. Tom Curry could be pushed to 6. Tipperick, again, you know, just they're brilliant back row players, so dynamic and mobile. And so there's lots of different ways you can go here, but it's kind of like if you're picking a team tomorrow, that's the forward pack I'd go with.
All right, well, look, we'll be back. There's so much to get stuck into around that particular topic, and there'll be more. And I know that, like, as well, we were just saying there, Quinny, that, like, over those first couple of games before the test kick in, like, some of those names that we've mentioned, there will be players within there, and, like, Atoje maybe is a prime candidate for it, but somebody like that who'll put their hand up and in one of these games and effectively be saying to Gatland, like, I've got to be in there, there's no way you can drop me. So there are those factors that stuff we haven't seen yet.
Atoje could be captain yet for one of the tests, because I think there's no guarantees with Alan Wyn Jones either. He's got to play well. He's got to play well in these warm-up games, and that's something Gatlin has proved before and shown us before. He's not afraid to make big calls. Look at the Drickle call in 2013 in Australia. So he said it, and I think he's leaving himself open to be able to do this, because he's already brought it up and said, look, there is a possibility that Alan Wynne-Jones might not start the test. So there could be a different captain for any of these test matches. But I think, you know, like I say, you want if you're picking a test match tomorrow, a team, Alan Wynne-Jones will be your captain going out for that first one.
Alan, how do those eight compare to what you suspect Warren Gatland will pick?
It'll be close to it, I think. He's a lot of trust in Ken Owens. Obviously, he coached him for Wales. He's a fan of Furlong's, and I think, you know, Furlong is a certainty. Obviously, unless he has a bad run on the warm-up games. Alan Wynne-Jones is his captain. He's put faith in him. So I think where the debates will end up being, you know, will be who's the other second row on and the makeup of the back row. But for me, I think he'll see it pretty straightforward that Faletau, as it stands, and Curry are two that he'll need in his back row. But again, you know, things can change. So I don't think it'll be huge change. And I don't think you could make a couple of changes to this forward pack and nobody would blink an eye. Like I said, you could put Wynne-Jones in there. You could put Jamie George in. You can change up the second rows. Or, you know, he is a fan of Tipperick as well. So I think there's a real chance that Curry could go to six and Tipperick could go to seven with Faletau. That could be your back row for the first test as well. So it just depends on what happens in the warm-up zone. You know, like I said, lots of things can happen here. There's inevitably going to be one or two injuries as well.
If we dig down a little bit into depth then, what ratio of forwards to backs would you go with for picking a test squad this summer?
Oh, would I go 6-2 split or yeah, would I go three backs? I'm not a fan of the 6-2 split unless you have someone like Tipperick who you could easily put out in the centre or on the wing, you know. So it depends. It's very, very risky, I think, that if you get a couple of injuries in the backs early on and it can disrupt the whole game. So you can always put a hooker in the back row. So that's why I'm not a fan of having six forwards on the bench and two backs. I just think it's too risky for me. Lots of coaches will start to do it. We saw the Champions Cup final last Saturday with Toulouse, and La Rochelle had a 6-2 split, both of them. So I just think if you get into a scenario of trying to match the South Africans, it's risky, you know. And South Africa was very, very rewarding for them at the World Cup, and they're the ones that kind of have, you know, made this, normalise this more in a sense with having six forwards in the back. I just always think it's a risk on. I think you should go with your five forwards and your three backs.
The question is just kind of more in the context of what South Africa maybe are likely to do and what you might want to send out against South Africa. So,
well, we don't know what they're going to do because they haven't played in so long. They haven't played since the World Cup. So I would imagine that they'll, you know, it's horses for courses. Depends what kind of a side the Lions are going to potentially have and how they match that. It will be no secret. They're going to try and physically impose themselves. They're not going to dramatically change the game because they've no rugby played since the World Cup. So their template will be very, very similar to the World Cup. It's all about pressure, really good kicking game, and physically dominating the opposition at set piece and in the contact areas.
Last one for me on this then. So if we go for a 5-3 split on the bench, I assume you'd be picking Itoje and Courtney Laws as your two second row / back rows. And then who would be your 16, 17, 18?
Not necessarily. I think I would, I would put Itoje and Tipperick there at the moment.
Sorry.
If I wouldn't pick two second rows. It may happen that he picks another second row who can play in the back row, but I just think Tipperick, if he doesn't start, it's very hard to leave him out of my 23. Jamie George, sub-hooker, Andrew Porter and Wynne-Jones.
Right. Porter is interesting.
Yeah, I think he's ahead of Xander Fagerson. Mm-hmm. I think he's someone who could challenge for a test spot if Tadhg Furlong doesn't play well. You know, he's obviously taken a fancy to Andrew Porter, Warren Gatland has. And I just think he's a dynamic prop who, again, is brilliant at the breakdown, physically very, very powerful, and he's scrummaging his top knot. So, again, this is a guy who could start a test match. Will they try and bring him over and make a loose out of him? And who knows? That could happen, particularly in some of the warm-up games. He might be tried there as an option, as a loose set.
It's just so wild, and Gatland will do it. Like,
as crazy as this sounds, Adrian, Porter could start a test at loose set.
Mm.
It could happen, you know, and to try and get his quality on the field with Furlong and what he does around the field as well. But look, why bring Rory Sutherland and Wyn Jones then if you're thinking that way? It just could happen if there's a bang or a knock to one of those players and he could play one of the warm-up games, as Lou said. And if he does, then he might come into the reckoning for one of the tests.
Yeah. And there's lots, as we said, water to go under the bridge before we get that far. A couple of things we wanted to talk to you as well about. Obviously, a Thoman sign-off for CJ, Tommy O'Donnell and for James Cronin this weekend. It does mean that, thankfully, the last time we get to see CJ Stander wasn't that late show appearance last Friday night, that we'll be left with slightly better memories than that. The one thing he did say that was sort of half interesting, Quinny, was that he still has loads to give. It was pretty clear, I'm sure you saw the Jake White comments during the week as well, this week, where he said effectively he'd approached CJ Stander about playing for the Bulls, and CJ was didn't want to compromise any retirement fund payouts, was the quote. He'd play for the Bulls tomorrow, obviously, if the money wasn't an issue.
Maybe, I think, yeah, but he could have played on in Ireland as well, you know. I think he can't have it every which way to go back to South Africa. I'm not sure how the retirement, the tax relief works. Do you still have to retire in Ireland, or can you retire somewhere else?
I think he can retire somewhere else and it not be impacted, but he couldn't go there then and play.
Yeah, with another team, yeah. So look, if anyone was in the same position, I just think he's, the heart has gone out of it for him. And I think mentally he's made this decision to try and go back to the family and to get out. Of course he could play for a number of years. And he could have stayed here for a year and got his retirement and stayed around Ireland. But I suppose he couldn't go back and play professionally then. The danger would have been if the other option would have been go back, play in South Africa and then come back to Europe or come back to Ireland and play for another year with another club. So it's a bit complicated, but none of us would do anything different, Adrian. I think that tax relief is there, and it was probably an incentive to make sure he hangs up the boots for good when he makes the decision, and that's what's going to happen now.
Yeah, and like, you know, of course he might still want to play, and nobody judges him over that, obviously, but I guess that's the way it's going to stay, unless he wants to lose that money. The Cronin departure, Quinny, we haven't had a chance to talk to you about yet, although it's been announced obviously over the last couple of weeks. They are obviously Munster now a bit light on experienced loose heads. Interesting reading some of Graham Rowntree's comments during the week. He said it was a competitive position, but about Cronin specifically leaving, he says guys do come through and guys leave the club. That's just the nature of clubs. It jumped out at me as like not exactly the sort of recommendation that you're going to be putting on your LinkedIn page.
Yeah, I think it's disappointing, I'm sure. Nobody knows exactly what happened here, but from what I understand, the contracts, they couldn't find a compromise to get a contract, and I think James Cronin wanted to stay. Munster wanted to keep him as well, but it's down to brass tacks, Adrian, and budgets, and I think COVID has probably influenced that. And you've got to stack the numbers up from Johan van Gran throughout the squad. And I think he's a player who would be in high demand in normal times. I think COVID might change that. But and maybe it's late in the day for James Cronin to get a club in France or in the UK or even in one of the other provinces in Ireland. It's a risk. I would be concerned about it. Obviously, we've got Liam O'Connor and Josh Witcherly coming through.
Yeah.
Jeremy Lockman, Dave Kilcoyne. But, you know, if Killer gets injured in one of the big games and misses a European game, there's a concern then. And that's a worry for him. So, look, these things happen, and Graham Rowntree is right. Players move on, and that's just a reality. And sometimes we kind of sidestep the fact that sometimes it is down to money. Most of the time it's down to money. And that's a reality, and I found that towards the end of my own career. If you don't get what you feel you deserve and your agent feels you deserve, you know, potentially you're out the door. And it's the same if the club don't feel that they can pay you that or you deserve that. Well, they don't offer it. And that's what you have agents for. And obviously they couldn't get an agreement here. I think there's definitely a number of years left in James Cronin. And a bit of an unfulfilled ability, I think. I think he's a brilliant player. He's someone you could easily put into an Irish team and he wouldn't let you down. And he would deliver at that level. He's been unlucky with injuries, and I think he'll be a loss for Munster.
We'll continue the theme of loose heads and the Irish thing, because I read with interest Dennis Buckley during the week. He's going to bring up the double century for Connacht against Benetton this weekend. It's an unbelievable shift from him. Very consistent performer, and it's been strongly suggested this week, Quinny, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on it, that if he was at any of the other provinces, he'd have a hat full of Ireland caps by now.
Yeah, possibly. I think, and that's, like it or not, that's the issue for some Connacht players. Tiernan O'Halloran nearly signed for Munster a couple of years ago, and he signed a heads of agreement, and then he changed his mind and stayed with Connacht, which is fully understandable. And I think sometimes it's playing with Munster or Leinster does elevate you up a little bit more, and it's harder for Connacht guys, and it's a bit unfair at times. They're trying to create their own legacy and their own development of Irish players. So sometimes you don't get the recognition that you deserve, the Connacht players. And he's been fantastic. Not the biggest prop in the world. So maybe is that an issue when you step up to the international level? But certainly he's been so consistent over the years and so important for Connacht. But like I said, that's the reality, Adrian. You know, I'm not saying that Tiernan O'Halloran didn't go on and get more caps for Ireland. But I think it could have been a factor.
Yeah, and like it's very unfair, though. It's very penal, like, that, you know, the likes of Henshaw and Aki, maybe in some regards, are such outliers that, like, they Connacht getting punished by who they are, almost. It feels, it feels very penal.
It does, but if you look at 2016, when they won the Pro 14, I think they had five or six, if I'm not mistaken, on the tour to South Africa. And that was their biggest representation and for a long time. And players who played really well throughout that phenomenal season from got rewarded. So you feel that Connacht have to have those type of seasons to get four, five, six guys into an Irish squad at a time.
Yeah, like it's too easy to write them off, Quinny, in some ways. Like.
It is unfair. It is unfair at times, but... That they're continuously fighting.
The Jack Carty stuff, where he gets effectively like blamed for the World Cup, and then like to hell or to Connacht. And if he was at one of the other Irish provinces, he would definitely have been back in by now.
Yeah, maybe. I think again, it's kind of like Dennis Buckley's one, and you know they've been incredibly loyal, all these Connacht players. I know Munster tried to get Ultim Dolan a few years ago, and he signed a new contract with Connacht to stay. If he went to Munster, would he have had more involvements with Ireland? Would he have got better? I don't know, because Connacht, like I said, they're trying to create their own legacy and their own brand and try and get it to the level of Munster and Leinster, which is always going to be challenging, because you would put European Cups behind those teams, and that's the level that expected of them, and that's not expected of Connacht. So it's a challenge, and sometimes it's very unfair, but the individuals have got to make their own decisions and take that into account when they sign contracts and if they want to stay and play with Connacht, that's what they're up against.
Quinny, thanks a million.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.